Hey there, I am Eric, the host of Tourism Marketing Mastery. And before we get into this episode, I want to give you a little bit of a unique opportunity that I don't see across most podcasts, and I could be wrong, but that is to ask me questions directly related to some of the challenges or hiccups or roadblocks, whatever you want to call them, that you're facing in your marketing right now. The reason I want to do that is because if you've listened to the last couple of episodes, you'll know I'm resurging this podcast up, and it's a little bit unique because at this point I've got nothing to sell you guys. I'm here just because I want to give you the information that I wish I had when I was younger, and I want to be truly valuable. And I thought the best way to be truly valuable is to directly respond to exactly what you're facing today. So send your questions in. And the way to do that is to go specifically to Spotify. And on Spotify, when you open up an episode to listen to of this podcast, it will give you a little Q&A box right there when you open. It'll be very obvious. Type your question in there. I think in some instances, you might even have the option of sending a voice question. And I will do my best to respond to those questions on this podcast. I'll even give you a little shout out. Just put your name, your first name, and the country you're from in there. I'll give you a shout out answering to you specifically. And if you want to borrow my brain, so to speak, how I would address or tackle the challenge that you're facing, I'm not promising it'll be the best answer that is possible out there, but it is an answer. And it's leveraging it through my years of experience and just the thousands of hours I've put into researching and understanding and experiencing playing with marketing, trying to filter your question through all of that and give you what I would estimate to be the most effective response that's going to help move you along. So if you'd like to ask me a question, go to Spotify right now, pop that question in, go do that now before we jump into the rest of the episode. All right, I'll see you on the other side. Hey guys, Eric here with another episode of Tourism Marketing Mastery. And today I want to talk about the 10 mistakes that I made in running a marketing team in the last 3 years and what I learned from that. So to give a little context here, I'm going to go back a little ways. Back when I was in university, I was taking a course in law. And I remember at the end of the course, I had a discussion with my professor where I said, you know, we learned a lot this year from case studies in what to do. We learned a lot of instances where lawyers made the right moves and they leveraged information in the case in a way that led them to a win. But we really don't get information on the thousands of cases where things went wrong. And I find that a bit ironic because in our own lives, our lessons are often hard won. They're won through our own failures. And it's actually our failures that really show us the path and lead us to what we eventually end up winning with and what works. And yeah, that's not really the way that information is taught. And I'm sure there's good reasons for that. Obviously, it takes a lot more time to go through the 1,000 cases that don't work than the one case that does. But what I want to do for you as a listener of this podcast is share some of the key mistakes that you might be likely to replicate if you don't understand the repercussions of some of the decisions that are made or have been made by myself or others when it comes to marketing. And so I want to share some of the biggest mistakes that I've made in the last few years in running a marketing team. Little context setting for this. So the company that I've worked with the last couple of years, I was brought on as a brand manager. A little bit more detail on that in a second. And this company this year is set to do just shy of 20 million. We got a marketing team of about 10 people. If you include myself, that's 11 people. And the primary business here is actually not in tourism, but it is a service-based business. And so there are a lot of parallels that you would see in a tourism-based business, and I have seen in tourism-based marketing teams. And that business is serving what we call contractors. So trades business owners, people that are running building companies, and roofing and electrical and plumbing and all of that. So we serve them in a consulting capacity, not in marketing specifically, but in business systems, management systems, to bring a lot of efficiency to those businesses. And anyway, so towards the end of 2020, I want to say, you guys might have heard this a little bit if you've listened to previous episodes, but I was running a tourism marketing consulting company. We're doing fairly well. And all of a sudden COVID hit and overnight we lost a bunch of those clients, and we kept that company going for a bit until we didn't, because there was just this big question mark around how long COVID was going to go. It obviously went from, you know, whatever it was, 3 weeks to stop the spread to much longer than that. You guys are all aware of that if you're around through COVID. So I had moved from tourism consulting into consulting for private companies, doing kind of one-on-ones. And I was doing that when this friend of mine called me up and asked if I could come in and take over the marketing and the brand management for their company, because they had hired a guy that was good at marketing, but primarily his background was in SEO, and he also was not very strong in team management, didn't have a lot of experience in that. And so it became evident within even the first 6 months, I would say, that this individual was not the person they needed to run the marketing team. And so they called me up, asked me what I was doing. And at that time, it seemed like a lucrative offer that that I couldn't refuse. And so eventually ended up as the brand manager on this marketing team, which was newly established. Before that, they hadn't really had a marketing team at all. So here are the 10 lessons from that. Excuse me. First lesson is, if the company has more than one owner, do not let more than one owner hold, in air quotes, the brand. And what I mean by that is, when I got hired onto this company as the brand manager, there were and continue to be three owners in the business. They thought they had done a good job establishing brand. They'd spent quite a bit of money, probably well over $100,000 at that point, establishing brand with a world-class branding company. If you guys have heard of Lululemon, the company that developed Lululemon and quite a few other well-established brands was the company that they used. And subsequently, the brand company that I worked closely with over the years to continue developing their brand. But between the three owners, they had established great logo, great imagery. What they hadn't established was the tone and the communication side of the brand very clearly, because they hadn't had to. They hadn't really put anything out there in terms of direct response marketing. They hadn't put out much in content. And so despite the fact that they had a brand, there was a lot of contention between the owners as to what that brand should look like moving forward. And so there were a lot of discussions going back and forth with the owners about how they wanted that brand communicated, whether it was more professional, a little bit more relaxed, whether there was more humor involved or less humor involved. And what was the relatability of that brand? What did it look and feel like as we moved forward? So we just saved ourselves a lot of time if we as a company just established, which we eventually did, who's the one owner here who's going to make the final call on these brand elements. And everyone else, if they have a problem with that, they go to that owner as opposed to putting me in between and having those conversations. So that's lesson number one, is establish who is the one owner that will dictate brand moving forward. And it may be the owner, or maybe it's decided that's the head of marketing. In either case, who's the one person? Lesson number two, very tied to lesson number one. A lot of these lessons are tied to each other, but don't hire a marketing team, until you establish what the look and feel of that brand is. So in those early months, there was a lot of inefficiency, because the company, before I came on, they thought they were doing me a favor by hiring out a team, and they're going to have that team ready to go in place for me to start directing when I came in, save me the time of having to hire that team, which was a nice thought. But when we got rolling, having a brand new team who didn't know anything about the company, the brand, or even the industry, put me in a very challenging position where I had to teach a brand new team about a brand that I was also brand new to, just learning about, and where that brand hadn't been strongly established, and there was not a consensus even among the owners around what that brand should look like. And so there was a lot of confusion in those early months. Save yourself the time and the effort before you go and you hire anybody in marketing, even if it's the intern, to go and post photos. Be very clear on the brand itself. What is the brand? What's the look? What's the feel? And most importantly, what's the communication? Establish some communication filters in terms of how that brand comes across. So is there humor? Is there not humor? Even within that, is it cheeky humor? Is it off the cuff? Like what's the style that you're talking about there? Is it professional? Is it not professional? Is it relaxed? If it's relaxed, is there relatability? There's a number of questions to ask. You do a little bit of Googling and you can learn style guides on communication, what that should look like. So establish that. So that should have been established before I came on. That's lesson number two, was taking on a team and starting this without insisting that that happen. Point number three, don't hire freelancers. This is very, again, related to point number two. Don't hire freelancers that don't understand your brand or don't really care about serving your market. So in this instance, this is lessons learned where if we were over capacity in creating all the assets that we wanted to create for marketing, sometimes we would look at, or I should say the company, they had a history of saying, oh, if we're over capacity, we're going to hire a freelancer and that'll help us alleviate the pressure there. Now, as much as this company has good hiring processes, one thing that wasn't very clearly established with these freelancers was whether they really cared about the content that was being produced. Because in this case, this is front-facing content to the market. You have to create content that immediately both stands out and relates to your client. Working with freelancers and trying to get them up to speed with understanding and, more importantly, caring about your brand, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it to try and educate a freelancer. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and you may never get there. In our instance, we had a freelance graphic designer who, she was great at graphic design, could care less about contractors, was way more focused on, not even graphic design, was way more focused on kind of her acting career and what that could look like. And so a bit of an uphill battle that way. And then we had a writer, content writer, who, again, great content writer, not the right background. First of all, she was a PR content writer writing articles for magazines and newspapers, very different style than writing content marketing. You wouldn't think so, but it is, it's very different. And just no context of the industry and like the relatability, and understanding what our industry cared about. So challenging uphill battle to try and educate them. If I were to do it all again, I wouldn't even try. I'd say, great, I'm glad you guys hired some freelancers for me. No offense, I'm going to go scrap these if they don't have the right track record and go find my own that have an understanding and really care about serving the industry that we're in and have context to that. So today, now, I mean, learned that lesson a little bit late, but now we've got a graphic designer who, her boyfriend's a plumber, and she spent years working with a construction company and helping them build out their brand. And so she knows intimately our market and what their problems are, what their cares are. And that does come through in her graphic design. And it's excellent. It's amazing. It hits home. She's incredible. So good example of that. And then same with our now content writer, somebody that really understands the market because she's worked with a few brands that are in contracting and construction, and she gets the pains of that industry. So that was point number two. Point number three is, oh, sorry. That was point number three. Point number four is don't put someone in charge of your marketing team that does not have marketing experience. Not just marketing experience, but marketing experience in a strategic form. And the reason I'm saying this is because as much as I've led marketing strategy within our marketing team, I was not the head of the marketing department. I kind of alluded to the fact that this team had brought in this other marketer whose acumen was more in SEO and didn't have as much experience leading teams as he alluded to. And so because marketing became a bit chaotic in that instance when he first came on and when he was kind of demoted and then I came in, at the same time that I came in, actually before I even came in, it was established that one of the other owners would lead the marketing team because that owner had a strong track record of driving results within the company. And he absolutely did. This owner was and is and continues to be a driver. He drives, he moves projects forward. And that's a great trait to have. Now, his background is primarily in accounting, and he very much looks at the world through numbers. And when it comes to marketing, there's very, very important numbers play here. And so with him coming in, his form of leadership was saying, okay, let us first establish the goals in numbers, which was also very challenging for a brand new marketing team that had not done this before. There's no context. You're literally just kind of pulling numbers out of thin air at that point. And then kind of being reprimanded for not hitting those numbers when you didn't have the context to set those numbers in the first place. And there was some frustration with the owner where he helped set the numbers, but then he would just drive the team to say, hit the numbers, hit the numbers, hit the numbers. And when it didn't happen, the team would get dejected. And there was very little conversation about the marketing strategy beyond the numbers. And in my experience, so much of the success in a marketing strategy, in fact, I would say the majority of the success in marketing strategy comes from the communication plan. And in this instance, the owner did not have the experience in understanding that A, there should be a communication plan, what's being communicated, and B, how to go about doing that. And so it was totally off the radar. And it led to, in a lot of ways, I'd say almost continues to lead to a lot of inefficiency in the marketing team, because there's a lot of ideas that are thrown out there, but you really need somebody that has experience to lead the marketing team to let them know all the things they shouldn't be doing, all the things they shouldn't be trying. That is a bit challenging though, when you're in a position where the owner wants to try all the things and you, despite your best efforts, might not be able to sway them from wanting to try a number of different projects, and that can get you in a bit of trouble. So ideally you want somebody that's leading the marketing team that has experience, has done the thing, and has done it at a high strategic level, and knows what to say no to and what to focus on, because the thing that'll drag your marketing expenses out the window, so drag your marketing team down and have your marketing expenses out the window, is not having one strong strategic leader that knows what they're doing, because you're going to spend so much time and money spinning your wheels. And I'll give examples of that later on. So that was point number four. Lesson number five, don't use email as your primary communication method. This is something that, again, this company, they had been doing for a long time. They wanted to continue doing, utilizing email as their primary form of communication, because they'd always done it that way. And so it was a real struggle to attempt to get them to take on some form of text messaging platform, software platform, to begin using that. In fact, in this instance, it took about 2 years before they even considered using SMS text, because they thought it was, I think, overly complex, and it's just not what the team, the rest of the team was used to. And what I can tell you is that this goes back to a marketing principle that you should know, which is your client is going to be much more likely to communicate with you on the platform that is their primary usage platform for communication. So for most people today, that is text. That's SMS, that's text. That's the thing that they're most likely to open and respond to. Think about it for yourself. How many emails do you get? How many emails do you ignore? How many emails do you put off forever versus your SMS inbox? Now, over time, you're going to get to a point where, yeah, you're probably starting to ignore some more of your SMSs, because that's also getting inundating, and there might be a new messaging platform at some point. But for the most part, almost everyone opens every single one of their texts, or at least reads it. And in most cases, you are used to responding and replying to your text messages. For you, for your clients, that might be SMS, that might be text. That might also extrapolate out to other platforms. It might be Facebook, it might be TikTok, it might be Instagram, it might be WhatsApp. Figure out what's the platform that your customers are primarily interacting on using, and make sure that you're communicating to them through that platform. So in this case, lesson learned, we eventually moved to SMS, and kind of as predicted, our engagement rates have skyrocketed way, way higher than they were through email. And people are reading them, people are engaging with them, people are taking action and replying. And so again, if it was up to me, I think I would have forced the issue a little bit sooner. So if you're listening to this, I mean, I'd say take action today. If you're not using SMS as your primary platform, do that. Find an app that works for you. Use SMS as your primary communication platform, and you will see your engagement skyrocket. Everything from your prospects right through, all the way through as they become a customer. Number six, don't make marketing decisions by committee. So One of the issues when you have a leader who does not have a marketing background is that they're kind of looking for ideas from everyone else because they're unsure. And what they'll do is they'll call everyone into a room. And in our case, many, many decisions were made by calling everyone that's on the marketing team, calling them into a room, or in our case, into a digital Zoom room. And we'd say, okay, we aren't getting the leads we need this month. What are all the ideas that everyone has? And as opposed to the, again, one individual who's done this before and kind of has the understanding to know where a lot of these ideas, they, even though they're good ideas, they might lead to dead ends. What you're doing is you're trying to take everyone's idea and then incorporate that into the one solution. And what that's a little bit like is it's a little bit like having a pizza party and getting 10 people together and you're baking one pizza. And before you go out and get ingredients, you just ask everyone, hey, what do you love on your pizza? What's your favorite pizza? Everyone's going to have a slightly different idea of what they think is great. And they'll give you ideas. They'll say, one person says, I want pepperoni. Another person says, I want pineapple. Another person says, I want anchovies. Another person says, I like dessert pizza. I want Oreos on there. And you're creating that one pizza by committee where now all of a sudden you have to throw everything together on the same pizza because you're trying to be fair to everyone and incorporate it. You end up with one shitty pizza that nobody truly likes. And so you want to avoid that. You want to avoid that. And that's truly what we've seen a number of times in the results of our campaigns is try to incorporate everyone's idea. And really almost any one of those individuals might have had a good idea on their own. But when you're trying to throw it all together in the same piece, it just does not work most of the time. So in this instance, as opposed to putting together projects or coming up with ideas by committee, you need to, again, have that one strong leader. Or if it's specific to an area of marketing, i.e. marketing ops, go and talk to the marketing ops expert and say, hey, what would you do in this instance? And let them just execute on their idea without getting anyone else involved because they know best in that specific arena. So try your best to avoid solving ideas by committee. Again, you need to rely on a leader that's been there, done that. And as your team gains experience, it's not a bad idea to present them with a challenge and say, how would you guys do this? But when they bring back the proposed solution, you need an experienced leader to pick through that solution and say, yeah, this is a good idea. And here's why. Here's the psychological trigger, why this works. And here, you know, I'm seeing a flaw here. And here's psychologically why this is a bad idea and why this doesn't work. So, yeah, don't put together ideas by committee. Mistake number 7, don't flog, in air quotes, an invisible offer. In this case, I'm going to give you a little bit of a definition here. So flogging being, don't try and beat a dead horse. Don't try and continue pushing an offer that's not working for you. And the invisible offer in this case is, do you have an offer that looks literally the same as everyone else's? Like if you look at your tour or your resort and you go to your homepage and then you go and you go to your competitors, are you saying virtually the same thing? In our case, in this company, I really promoted the idea of building out a unique offer. And unfortunately, this is something that got away from me as well. I just didn't have the power to drive this in the way that I wanted to early on. And so this business, the owner that was leading the marketing team, he likes to be very thorough. In a lot of areas, that makes sense. And it's very good. It's good practice to be well prepared, to be well thought out, to be thorough. But in this instance, what he wanted to do was go and ask the market what they wanted. And there's a danger to this, and I'll explain it now, I guess, which is if you go and you ask the market what they want, they'll only tell you what they've seen. It's very rare that they're going to be able to come up with a unique offer. And so I would say Henry Ford said this best, where he said, hey, if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have told me they wanted faster horses, as opposed to the automobile that he was able to bring to the public market. And so That's kind of what happened here. The owner insisted that we went out and we did market tests. And in those market tests, what we did is we tested our own clients. We literally paid tens of thousands of dollars to a firm to survey both our own clients and then survey clients outside of our business who were potentially good fit clients, people who fit a profile of the client that we would want. And we asked them, hey, if you could kind of build your perfect coaching service, what would that look like? That's not a bad question to ask. I want to preface this with saying it's not a bad thing to ask your clients what they want. The issue comes when you take what they're telling you and you take that at face value and you turn that and put it into an offer in the market if that offer already exists. If the offer doesn't exist, great. Take the clients and take their needs and their wants and exactly as they say them and put it in the market if that doesn't exist. But if it does, then you're in trouble. So in this instance, our clients were kind of clear about the fact that the perfect consulting business would have some kind of method that would involve systems. And when they started saying systems, we said, okay, how would you describe those systems? What would that look like? And so they started describing the words that they would use for these systems, and they described the way that they'd like this whole thing presented to them, which in our case came up with the contractor growth method. And that in itself is not a bad idea. In fact, it's a phenomenal idea if it didn't exist elsewhere. The problem is that our clients, as they gave us this information, I could see as it was being built out, like, this is verbatim. It looks and feels exactly like our top two competitors. Like, the visuals are the same. The words we're using are the same. The growth method thing is the same. Like, it's the same as what the best players in the market are already using. Because when we went and asked the clients what they wanted, the only reference point they had was what they were already used to using and seeing. And so it doesn't allow you to create a unique offer. So in my instance, I would have maybe pushed for unique offer even harder than I did. And to give you a reference point here, guys, like a really real reference point is still today, it costs this firm about $10,000 to acquire a customer. And with that exact same clientele, I was able to put together a test offer and put that out to the market and consistently acquire customers at $253 a customer. Obviously, there's a massive, massive difference there. And yet, even despite the fact I had that conversation with one of the owners, they're very adamant about, like, well, that's not what the market told us that they wanted. And my argument is, like, they're pulling their wallet out for it. Like, this is what the market is actually paying for. So don't let your ego get in the way. If your market is willing to pull out their wallet and pay for something and you're able to deliver on it, go do that thing. Make that part of your business model. But in this case, don't spend your time flogging a dead offer. Now, how do you create a unique offer? I go through that in detail in episode 50, I believe, in this podcast. So creating a USP, unique selling point or proposition. Go through that. It's still as relevant today in that episode. I lay out the 5 points to creating a unique offer, and that's how I would do it and how I have done it actually again recently here. And that'll get you to a point where you're creating something that is unique in the market. So don't flog an invisible offer. That's lesson number 7. Lesson number 8, don't delay content marketing. I would say this is, we spend a lot of time kind of figuring out how to build out our content. And it took us, again, in the instance of thoroughness, we took a lot of time to really try and get everything right. Now, there were lessons learned in this for me, which is it's not always good to do things quick and dirty. And yet there's a balance because it took us probably about a year to really get our content up and running. And that was because we as a company do things well, we do them thoroughly. And so in our case, we wanted to go out and rent a studio space downtown Vancouver, have high production value, have multiple cameras, multiple mics, have professional video editors to put this all together. I would say in a lot of instances that can be a mistake. If I were to do it all again, I would do a few things. I would say, yeah, if you can get to the point where you're doing everything high production, absolutely, like move your production value up. But don't let that stop you from beginning sooner than that. So I would say there's a lot of value in understanding your market and testing the market with content early on, especially if you are the person creating the content. You can't create amazing content right off the bat. I mean, it's almost impossible. You kind of have to, learn this as you go. Your first piece of content is not going to be your best piece. It's just the first piece. You just need to do it to learn how the market responds to that. And if you're getting no traction, that means the market doesn't like it. So try something different. So go create a few pieces of content before you think you have to create super, super high value content off the bat to be able to learn the market and understand what it is they want. Now, one thing in this whole exercise for myself that I think was done really well, and this was actually a lesson learned for me as well, is if you can afford it, go hire somebody that is the smartest person that you can afford to advise you on how to build out the thing. So go hire an expert and consult with them. Either do it as a one-off, or in our case, what we would do is we would meet with a podcast consultant once every 2 weeks to understand how to really leverage podcasting and use that as a platform to build out to drive results. And what I can tell you now, kind of 3 years later, is that that podcast that we built in the contracting space is arguably the most well-received podcast in the contracting space. I would say for sure it is if it comes to contracting and business systems and how to utilize smart business practices within a contracting business. And yes, there are a few podcasts in that space. There's a number of podcasts in that space. I'd say that we are, not by my own estimation, but by the numbers, we are the top podcast in that space now. And we're getting, I think we're pretty close to 50,000 downloads a month now, which in a very niche space is pretty good. So yeah, so start early. And if you can, hire an expert as soon as you can, rather than trying to learn all those lessons yourself. Lesson number 9, don't dance around your offer. So when I came in, I was told, hey, this market, they don't like to be sold to. They like to kind of find this offer on their own and make conclusions on their own. Now, this market was not a market that I was super familiar with, the contractors. And so I took this company's experience at face value. And I thought, okay, well, you know, the sales team has experience. They know what they're talking about. What I discovered over time was that this market doesn't like cheesy salespeople or cheesy sales methods or anything that looks like kind of scam marketing. And that applies to, I would say, almost any business. Is you don't want to feel like you're being sold to. And I would say that if that's your experience with marketing or with sales, that is low level marketing and sales. I would say over time, my discovery was that even in this space, people are people, no matter what space they're in, whether it's in our case, now this is very heavy B2B. Like we're a multi-million dollar company. We're also selling our services to multi-million dollar companies, but they're business owners at the end of the day. And that also means that they're people at the end of the day. And so people are people. Psychological triggers are the same. The principles are the same. There is nuance in how you leverage those principles. You can do that tastefully. And I'm sure if you listen to any other podcast, marketing podcasts, you will have heard the best forms of marketing don't look like marketing. And I would say that does apply here. And yet at the same time, I would say you do need to be very clear about your offer and what it is that your guest or client is going to get. And you can't beat around the bush. So with a lot of our webinars, we would deliver really great content, great tools, great methods. And then at the end of the webinar, we'd say, hey, if you want to download the tools we talked about in this webinar, go to the download form. You can fill in your name, your contact information. And then there was like a tiny little checkbox on the content form that said, by the way, if you'd like to have a phone call with us, check this box. I would argue that you should be much, much more clear with your offer. than kind of putting it as almost an afterthought in your marketing, because oftentimes the client wants to know, they want to know what they're going to get from you, what that value piece is to them, because you could be the thing that they're absolutely looking for. But if you're kind of dancing around the offer thinking, oh, they'll come to us when they want to, yeah, you're going to get the clients that are hottest to trot or the guests that are like most ready to go and chomping at the bit to get what you need, but you're missing out on a huge market share that way. And so be very clear with what it is that you've got to offer. And that leads me to mistake number 10. And this one I was blindsided by, as simple as it was. This did take me time to figure out. It really opened my eyes to like how many times this is not done right, and by myself as well, over time. And so one of the biggest things I learned in working with this marketing team and working with the company as a whole was, don't sell your service without first sitting down and defining what is the purpose and what are the outcomes that we expect from this service. So in our case, we had to sit down and say, okay, what are the purpose and outcomes that we expect from this consulting offer? Surprisingly, we'd never done that, and that made it really difficult to lay out our offer and understand, like, okay, what is it that the client can expect? Now, within tourism, you need to do that as well. You need to do that for your guest or for your participant or your member or whatever you want to call them, whether you're in resort marketing or tourism, or sorry, selling tours. You need to sit down and say, okay, what's the purpose of this thing, and what are the outcomes? Like, what are we doing here? Why are we doing it? And what will the person we serve, what are they going to walk away with by the time they're done with us? Being able to sit down and identify that as the owner, or potentially as a team, is very important, because it makes the job so much easier for marketing to say very clearly, hey, this is exactly what you can expect from us. Not only is this what you can expect, but we can demonstrate that we've done this time and time again if we point back to our previous clients or our previous guests or previous members or whatever it is. So huge lesson number 10. Don't sell anything without first sitting down and identifying what's the purpose and what are the outcomes of that thing, of that experience. And so make sure you do that. That will bring your entire team into clarity, and that will bring your marketing into clarity as well when it comes to your offer. Again, I'd say that last point, put that all through the filter of a unique offer. Don't make it a cliche offer. Make sure that those purpose and outcomes, make sure that that is different from your competition. And it will mean that you actually have to shift the way that your company does business in most cases. And it'll be the most exciting shift you ever make, because it's fun and because it comes with higher profit margin, because now you're not competing apples to apples or oranges to oranges. So my last parting thought here is, again, if you don't know how to create that USP, go back to episode 50, I believe, on this podcast, and walk through the 5 points on how to create a unique offer. All right, that's all I've got for you guys today. Hopefully that was valuable to you, and I'll see you in the next podcast.